Hey, oh, Zoe.
Oh,
what's wrong?
Oh, Mr. Gandolfini, I'm so glad you're here. I heard a loud noise and it really, really scared me.
Oh, don't worry, Zoe. Everything's okay.
Thank you. I feel much better now.
Good, I'm glad. Because I know what it's like to be scared.
Really? Well, what scares you?
Well, there are three things that scare me, Zoe. One thing I'm afraid of is the dark. I've always been afraid of the dark. Want to know what else scares me? Getting a haircut.
Really?
Yeah, I'm afraid of haircuts. So you see, Zoe, sometimes I get scared too.
You said there were three things that you were scared of. What else are you afraid of?
Giant talking vegetables.
I was still stuck on the part where you said you once knew a girl.
What? I don't look like I could know a girl.
No.
Why? It's the pock marks.
No, it's just the lack of skull.
Hey, watch it, dear.
Some of my best friends are cephalopods.
What? And with that, welcome to the show.
Johnny's special guest tonight is Cassius Maximus.
You can't be doing that.
He's still an old fart.
Sure, it's copy. Yeah. Well, we performed it, therefore it's performance.
Okay.
Right? Either that or it's used in comedy, so it's therefore...
Your name used to be Hot.
So it could be whatever, right?
You know, someone sued the company that claims that they're the owners of Happy Birthday. They just successfully
yes, it was the person who was
forever.
Doing the documentary on the song Happy Birthday. I thought that was rather ironic.
But anyway, someone sued them for declaratory relief that it's really not copyrighted. And this case is still pending. But,
really?
But he brought up a lot of historical evidence to prove that it was never copyrighted and certainly never owned by this company.
So they basically were some kind of song patent troll.
Isn't it ironic?
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. It's a song by what's her name?
He's having his best friend. What's her
name? I am, but you didn't see it.
That's true.
So you're listening to.
Hi there.
You're listening to a
Slurp.
Show.
Can I buy you a drink? Can you buy me a drink? Can you pull me out of the drink? It's kind of soggy in here.
It's a show where Mark, myself, and Bobble Rob get together to talk about the week's goings on in tech.
And convince each other once again that there's actually someone listening out there.
Right.
And there actually are people listening.
Yes, us. When we logged back into the site to see what we said.
Last week when I posted on Facebook we were recording a show, I lied. But a couple of people commented that it's about time.
Why should that surprise us?
Wait, what? They commented that what?
A couple of people commented that it's about time they actually wanted to listen to another.
They actually
show.
Did?
Yeah.
Wait, people commented?
Two people.
Really?
Two. Yeah.
Wow. That's cool.
Do they live with their parents?
And it wasn't spam.
Neither one does.
We get spam often from the blog, which is located at www.slurpcast.com.
Did you say...
He was on the Facebook
channel. Was it really?
Yeah.
People are actually listening to the Facebook.
He was just Uncle Brucey immediately.
You mean there are people out there who have sadder lives than we do?
Well, there's actually only two people who listen to the show that are willing to actually like post comments in the blog or communicate with us via via the Facebook page.
The inner tubes?
The inner tubes.
Doesn't someone here have an inner tube for a belt?
Yes, my belt is this fancy thing, handmade.
It only has one
by this guy.
Surface.
He makes belts out of used inner tubes from bicycles. Then he uses the rubber, the tire of the bicycles, to make something else. I forgot what product he makes out of the tires.
So now I can tire of you and your belt at the same time.
That's right.
So we have stories to talk about.
We do.
A lot has gone on since the last show that was actually published live on the site.
Drama.
Really?
Hold on. I have something I have to say the first time those doors
probably
did that.
people could hear that.
Yeah, there's a sliding door.
I'll go make the sound happen, okay? You announce it.
Okay.
Oh, God.
We were about to make the sound happen. That's not going to help me.
No, probably won't.
Happen on the bridge.
It sounds like Scotch tape being stretched. across.
Well, Scotty might have said something.
We're sitting right next to a
sliding glass door.
Where are we? With the
Hilton Garden Inn in Santa Rosa, California, near the Sonoma County International Airport.
We have to go to this county before we're allowed to record anymore.
So Mark and I actually got in the car and physically drove up to this county.
To see my sorry no car ass.
Right.
Wow, you're publicly announcing that you don't have a car.
Well, my wife has a car.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes she drives me around in it.
Anyway, we're sitting next to these sliding doors.
That sound like Star Trek doors, sort of.
Kind of the main entrance to the hotel.
Which is a very nice hotel, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually really nice.
But we're not staying at the hotel, we're just having dinner in there.
We're loitering.
Right. But anyway, so I have a story about the Star Trek doors.
Go ahead.
There's a video that was made a few years ago, actually, I forget how long ago, with Will Wheaton.
Ooh,
although, if you watch Family Guy, then you might want to say Will Wheaton. Anyway, that's an inside joke for Family Guy people.
Is it Wheaton? Will Wheaton.
Anyway, so it was him and Neil deGrasse Tyson having a very funny chat at like a science fiction convention. And one of them, they were both Trekkies when they were growing up. So, I think Tyson, Neil deGrasse Tyson said, when he was growing up, he saw the holodecks, saw us, wow, how cool this is. I'm gonna have this. I bet in my lifetime we're gonna have all this cool kind of stuff.
Okay.
But the one thing he did not believe man would ever have in his lifetime is a door. You walk up to a door and it opens? That's just too crazy. That'll never happen
really?
In my lifetime. That's what he said.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
So you're calling Neil deGrasse Tyson narrow-minded.
Yes. Well, he admitted it.
First, you admit to encouraging genocide.
Or it might have been Will Wheaton who said that. I forget which one of them said that.
Will Wheaton.
Who are we to decide such a thing?
Right.
Will Wheaton.
Stop.
The Family Guy has
Stop.
A whole episode where
Stop.
It was. It was all
Wheaton or Wheaton.
Beep. Beep.
Okay. Beep.
Yeah. So anyway,
back it up, folks.
All right, well, that was pretty good. Did you know Will Wheaton was actually interested in the video toaster when he was growing up? He actually worked for the company that did the video toaster add-on for the Amiga.
Huh. Okay.
I did not know that.
Yeah, there's a. I have a article I can post in the show notes of Will Wheaton sitting very young, a very young Will.
Let's move to the next story. So you stop doing that.
Okay. Let's see. I have an article here, BioShock's Ken Levine writing Logan's Run movie remake.
Okay. Mm.
Which is interesting. So you guys are all familiar with Logan's Run.
Oh, yeah.
Famous.
I'm way past the date that I should have been liquidated or
so
whatever.
I got this from Boing Boing. Irrational Games co-founder Ken Levine, one of the main minds behind BioShock, is writing the script for a remake of the classic 1976 science fiction film Logan's Run.
With Michael York.
Based on the 1969 novel by William F. Nolan and George Clayton Johnson. Let's see here.
Sanctuary.
Yeah.
We seek sanctuary.
Warner Brothers has begun developing a remake of the movie. A couple years ago, Nicholas Winding Refn.
Winding?
of something.
They got me doing it. Thanks a lot.
And Pusher fame. Was going to direct, and Ryan Gosling signed on as Logan. Anyway, so I like that movie. It was really cool. It's time for a technologically more advanced remake of this, and hopefully this is good.
Can we hope for a decent script?
Ken is pretty, like, as you may have known, the plot and story behind BioShock Infinite is pretty freaking awesome. So he has the ability, I think, to make a very good movie.
Okay, let's hope.
Yeah. But, again, that's video games, right?
Do you think Michael York will have a cameo?
Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah, that would be very... That would be awesome.
Well, I have a story about battery materials being made using crab shells.
Crab shells?
Sure. And I know you guys are pretty crabby,
crab
so...
Crab shells, sure. Yeah.
Sure. Crab shells usually are just a nuisance that you have to crack and dig through to get to... To the delicious meat inside.
Meat.
Unless you're Jewish or Muslim.
Are you now telling Sean Connery?
Yeah.
Meat. Eat it, Will.
Take off your panties.
But one team of material scientists thinks that shells could be helpful in forming materials for long-lasting batteries.
Huh.
The team used the nanostructures found in the crustacean shells as templates to make sulfur and silicon electrode materials for lithium-ion batteries.
Hmm.
Sulfur for silicon electrodes have a 10 times greater theoretical energy storage capacity than electrodes used in chemical batteries. See the show notes if you want to follow that link.
Yep.
Or just read /dot like I did to get all these articles.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, good. Pieces of paper that he picks up off the street.
He's touching,
I just touched it.
Touching the device that I have.
Yeah.
What's that device that you have?
It costs $1,000, but all you have to do is just touch it and you'll want one.
Not really, actually. Anyway, yeah, I went ahead and I got myself, rounded one up, and I got myself a Surface Pro.
You watched the Click Dance too often.
It was an investment. Yeah. I've been struggling with Android tablets and going through each of those Android tablets to see if I can actually do Python development. I was never really satisfied with what was available for development.
Maybe you're just like my mother.
She's never satisfied.
Exactly.
Are you writing compilers for a Python brain? Is that what you're doing?
No. Compilers? I'm not compiling. Okay. I am when I
said Python, you mean the snake, right?
Right, right.
Okay. Just call me Snake.
So you're writing, you're trying to probe the Python...
Snake, Plissken.
This Python brains, right?
Brains.
Yeah, okay. Speaking of brains, your movie's coming out pretty soon.
My movie's coming out?
Yeah, World War Z.
Brains.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, so I went with the Surface Pro so that I could actually install my IDE, the development environment, and actually write code.
Okay.
But...
How does that have anything to do with the fact that he stroked your Surface?
Well, so if you challenge...
That sounds way racier than it should be.
I've said this before on the show, but if you went to the Microsoft Surface store, or the Microsoft store, or the pop-up store in any of the malls around the USA...
Yeah, really early when it was first opened.
Really early, and you challenged the store salespeople with comparing the Surface to an iPad... If you were savvy enough, technically, you could back them into a corner so they couldn't actually answer you because they didn't know how to answer, or the answer was obviously that the iPad was better, they would simply respond, you just have to touch it.
But that was before it came out, so you couldn't actually touch it then.
Well, no, that was even when they came out.
Oh, he was still saying that?
The guy was still saying that. Oh, okay.
I wonder how many contexts that phrase has been used outside...
I just thought that was hilarious.
I just think it's funny that he touched your Surface.
He did. He touched my Surface. Yeah. Mark Bernay.
What?
Anyway. So, but the Surface Pro is out of the two different tablets that Microsoft is offering, it's the true Intel i5 core processor,
okay.
And it runs Windows applications unlike the RT.
Okay.
So with that, I knew I could install all the standard Windows apps.
So this really is your machine. It's not just a tablet. It's not just a... doohickey.
It's essentially a laptop in a tablet form with a clickable keyboard.
Costing twice as much as a laptop.
Right.
I'm not going to argue. I mean, I could go into
Rob touches.
No.
I could say that the components here are actually fairly expensive, fairly high end. The screen's really beautiful.
My precious. My precious. Hey.
Anyway. All right. So.
Whose turn is it?
Whose turn? It's Mark's.
Yeah. Bring
it. I kind of segue to something you did earlier.
Are you about to make a fart sound?
No. Do you remember... remember the SETI at home thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the other...
I remember SETI at home.
What's the one?
The screensaver, right?
Find prime numbers at home. There's...
What?
There's different projects.
Fibonacci at home? I don't know.
Yeah, there's ones like that. There's several projects through the years where you use your home
shared
computer.
Computing time on things over some...
Well, they're doing one now for warps in space. They want people at home to take a tiny little angle of space pictures and look around for certain oddities that
So they're looking for wormholes in space.
That computers have trouble at recognizing, but people's brain...
Okay.
So they want you to... to work on that at home, look for these little things.
So it's not something you just run in the background.
No, you actually have to do work.
You actually have to analyze the picture of space.
For people who don't know what SETI at home was, it was a screensaver you installed on your Mac or Windows PC.
I thought it was a show that came on after ELF.
Maybe it was too, but the SETI at home app would get a chunk of data from NASA and calculate it looking for patterns, and then if it found patterns, send that data back to NASA, or then back to the City at Home project. And then they
by way of the NSA, who edited out all the alien communications.
No, I don't know.
Looking for terrorists.
But the idea behind it was to look for extraterrestrial life or patterns through these chunks of data that they
had
collected.
Didn't Steve Ballmer actually foot the bill for a lot of that?
Was that Steve Ballmer? Or was it?
I think it was Steve Ballmer.
No, it was. I think it was the other guy who did Tech TV.
Oh, well.
I don't remember.
Some internet billionaire.
Okay.
Yeah, it was probably the other Microsoft guy.
Yeah, who's
Paul Allen.
Paul Allen. That's it.
Sorry. We also might have to cough after saying Paul Allen. That wasn't a cough, folks.
Oh, but I feel so much better.
Funny we don't.
Why is my seat wet? Sorry.
I'm not going to touch that surface.
Leather is very...
Instagram does video now.
If you stopped wearing leather pants, this wouldn't happen.
So what's the deal with the Instagram video?
Well, it's like Vine. You ever play with Vine?
No. I was going to ask you about Vine.
Yeah, Vine, you're forced to make 10-second videos in pieces.
Okay.
You hold down the record button as long as you want to record.
Okay.
Let it go, and then move the camera somewhere else and hold it down for a couple seconds, move the camera somewhere else.
Okay.
So you have to take 10 seconds in whatever chunks you want by how you press the record button.
Okay.
So Instagram is doing the same thing. You have to take a 10-second video, but you do it in chunks by holding the record button.
I know how to program a VCR.
No, you're too old. If it's blinking 12 o'clock, what do you do?
Let's see. Go to sleep because it's midnight.
Let's see.
Is it my turn now?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's your turn.
Okay, I have an interesting one just because I was someone who liked to look through all these computer discount catalogs at the time. But the former Tiger Direct president has been indicted in $230 million laundering scheme. Carl Fiorentino, known to many Slash daughters, where I got this article, for his regular hyperbole-filled emails advertising unbelievable blowout pricing on memory, storage, and other components, and overclocker specials, has been indicted in a New York federal court on 7 counts of fraud and money laundering. Basically, he was letting certain suppliers pay him extra money to funnel more traffic to those particular sites, I guess.
Okay.
Or those particular vendors.
Okay.
But I always thought, just by looking at the catalog, that it looked kind of skanky.
Nice.
I bought things from them before.
I bought stuff from there before, but it had the look of like a glossy cereal box.
Is that the one that has the fake ads? I get this daily newsletter from many different stores, and one of them has these kind of fake prices where they'll say like a Surface Pro for $50 and stuff like that.
No, that's not Tigerette. I know the ads you're talking about.
But it turns out they only have
one of
those.
They
posted one of them at 3 in the morning or something.
Yeah. That's a different technique than used car salesmen use. You know, basically where they put an ad in the paper for some car that's really, really low priced, but then you look really closely and it says just this VIN number.
Right. Yeah, but my main problem with Tiger Direct is they don't fucking sell tigers. Not a one on the whole site.
Well, they had a problem with the packaging.
She punched holes in them.
That's funny.
UPS complained that their drivers were not showing up in the vans when the thing was delivered.
Walk-through metal detectors were invented to catch thieving employees. Today, we walk through metal detectors to get into courthouses, airports, and even concert venues. But back in the 1920s, the first walk-through metal detectors weren't invented for finding weapons or nail clippers. They were invented for searching would-be thieves. Go to www.slurpcast.com to read the rest of this article. I just pulled this one out of my rear.
Because we're lazy.
Well, no, I just thought that was rather interesting.
Foursquare has a time machine.
Okay.
Where you can look back at your history of Foursquare check-ins.
You know what I didn't know is that every time I check in on my Android phone with Google, it's actually keeping track of the history of all the check-ins that I make and all the places I go.
Don't they send you emails every once in a while warning you that's on?
Well, it's not public. It's private. Okay. So I guess that's why I'm not getting the emails. Yeah. But I actually was today going through Google+, and I noticed there's my history. Every single place that I've ever gone
here.
That I've automatically, and I have my phone automatically check me into certain places that I frequent. Okay. So it was rather odd to see the history of all these places.
Huh.
But it is a part of the phone.
I was doing longitude for a while, latitude.
Is it latitude? It's latitude.
Where it keeps track of every,
yes,
of your GPS location.
Right.
If you don't check in any place.
And I think I have you as somebody who can see my actual location.
Yeah, that would get emails from warning me that that one was on sometimes.
Okay.
So when you get too close to him, he can just hop on a bus and get away from you?
Like, right, if I don't, well, it's more or less, if my location doesn't change for 3 days, okay, there's a problem.
He knows where to look for your body.
Exactly. Wait, Wes hasn't moved for 3 days, so therefore there must be something wrong. Let me find somebody who is nearby him, right, to go out there and see if it's okay. Anyway.
I gotta go feed his cat.
Well, you know, there's
all three of them.
There is some legitimacy there. You know, it would be nice to be able to locate your friends if somebody says, hey, so-and-so hasn't shown up.
Okay.
Where are they? Especially your cheating friends.
Is it called Google Corpse? Brought to you by Sell Your Organs Online. Well, I've got one that I don't know how to bring it up enough times, but basically an LA Times article was...
A new LA Times article?
An LA Times article was mentioning that after visiting well-known sites such as ADP, Verizon Wireless, Scott Trade, Geico, Equifax, PayPal, and Allstate, that all these places that should have been doing it better were leaving sensitive data in your browser disk cache, even after you close the browser. So if anyone had access to your system or gained access to your system, they could just basically go through your browser cache and see all kinds of stuff. Partial social security numbers, credit card statements, canceled checks, prescription histories, and gain access to your accounts on those online services.
Will those go away if you close the browser? It's a lot of sites.
No, they were saying that these were not going away when you close the browser, unless you have your browser set to clear the cache as you close it. And my point being, no one should have it set any other way.
Right.
Just because corporations are lazy and stupid, and it's not your fault. They're going to just let your data be accessed, whatever, unless they're forced to be doing a better job of it.
So there's now all this controversy, and everybody's kind of talking about this, how, you know, how much has our privacy been invaded by the NSA, and it makes a lot of people uncomfortable. Some people don't care because they feel that allowing their personal information to be obtained by the NSA helps us stop terrorism. I want to know what you guys think.
I think it's a crock of shit.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised that anyone's surprised. I mean, this has been going on for decades.
Well, we've heard this kind of stuff before, but it's always been speculative. People have said,
hasn't.
the government has these super machines.
Of that one telecom guy claiming that AT&T had that big data center in San Francisco that was routed to everything.
Yeah.
I mean, if that didn't wake people up, what does it take to wake people
up? Well, but a lot of that stuff wasn't, was sort of...
If there are people in power who have access to this stuff, it will be abused.
Yeah.
It just will.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
And has been being abused for decades.
Yeah.
So my point isn't, oh my God, it's happening. It's like, why are people putting up with this?
We had no choice. We weren't even told about it.
Right, but I'm just, now that...
Right.
Well, so, but there have been huge clues dropped from space into open fields.
Right.
It's like...
Well,
you really had to be tuned out effectively to not at least suspect it.
Well, suspecting is one thing, and feeling uncomfortable about it is one thing, but then all of a sudden having the proof thrown in your lap is like, nobody asked me if they were to approach me and say, this is what we're going to be doing, and it's to help keep you safe, and here's how we're going to be going about doing it, and giving me some way to opt in
the
or something like that.
The whole war on terror is mostly a crock of shit. The wars that were started illegally after 9/11 have done more to perpetuate terrorism than they have done to protect it.
Yeah.
It's not just my idea. It's proven fact.
Right. So anyway, at this point in time, there's all this controversy. People are like just now kind of voicing opinions, and
it's a little bit too late now, don't you think?
They would like nothing better than
Skynet is active.
They would like nothing better than to continue to do what they're doing, but because
and they will.
Well, maybe not.
But the majority of people don't feel in mind, though. Kind of.
Is it a majority though?
I don't know. I think so.
I don't think it's a majority. I think
it depends on which corporate agency is sponsoring the poll.
No. Well, what I'm saying is, like, at least from the interviews that I've seen from people walking around, newscasters walking around in New York and just kind of pulling people out
in
the street.
What about people that you talk to directly? How do they feel about it?
They don't like it. None of my friends like it at all.
Okay, then there's your poll.
But a few people feel like if it's something that's going to keep us safe, then it's okay.
Yes, but what percentage of those people?
Very small, from my opinion. In my opinion.
Safe from what? The government's historically have been more dangerous than anything else.
NSA's
if they have dirt on you,
taking their side. I'm just saying that they're claiming that because they have access to this information, they've been able to stop 50 different terrorist
attacks. That may well be true. I'm not saying that's bad. In fact, I'm saying the algorithms they're using are probably very good. And there's probably a ton of good people in there doing the right thing.
Yeah, but
not like specifically looking at data from some citizen that they just want to screw over.
Yeah.
My point is, when they're not doing the good job that they're doing, they have access and power and human nature to abuse it for political purposes, which has already happened in the past, and it will continue to happen in the future. And because it's so prevalent right now, we have no choice but just to live with it or leave the country.
Well, no, my problem is that it's happening without my...
The country doesn't help.
No.
True enough, if it's worldwide.
My problem is that it happened without my knowledge and consent.
Right. But so does everything else.
Not everything, but many things do, and I'm not comfortable with that. I'm not comfortable with spyware getting installed without my consent, and then all of a sudden I've got like stuff sitting in the background.
I'm sorry. I'm just rather
No, I'm not fighting
this
you.
Whole thing.
I'm agreeing with you.
We're actually
all
agreeing, people.
We're all agreeing.
Even though I have him in a half Nelson right now.
I'm only spouting the other side.
Yeah.
Because I want to make it like at least a little bit of. At least explain what the other side.
To explain both sides of the discussion, yes, I agree.
It's always good to take both, to at least understand both sides of the argument. And I'm not, I think it's terrible, and I think we've known about or speculated this as possible.
We've known about it.
I have like thought to myself, okay, so this is possible. People like have access to, you know, they've got packet sniffers and they're watching me browse the web.
Not just that. Several years ago, for about a year and a half, my mail was being systematically opened.
Your snail mail?
Yes. My regular U.S. postal mail. And I didn't care.
Okay.
I said it was nothing to look at, but I don't know why it started. And when I told my wife, she's like, no. I'm like, look, it's open.
Right. Well, you probably have somebody like standing outside waiting for you to get mail and going through
No, it was from a locked mailbox.
Okay.
I knew it was through the post office. They were opening it. They weren't even bothering to close it back correctly. Right.
Well, if it really was to prevent terrorism, there's got to be a better way of doing it than just not asking and just going, you know, full Humphrey Bogart into our privacy.
My point is, the whole thing is a crock of shit.
The whole
war on terrorism, just like the war on drugs.
Okay.
It's just so a bunch of people can keep making money.
I see.
It's just like every war we fought in the last 50 years.
Right. Well, see, the reason I'd be skeptical about that 50 things because... The FBI announces all the time they caught terrorists in the United States.
Right.
And it always turns out to be what's the name of the thing where the FBI agents convince you to do something? Entrapment.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, if you read the things that the FBI caught, they almost always sound like...
They're trying to find
some
susceptible person to say, hey, you know, why don't you do this? Okay,
yeah,
they did that.
Barely on the legal side of entrapment, but still they don't seem like anything that would have... happened by itself.
Entrapment was the word you were looking for earlier.
Exactly.
So in the wake, I got this article here, in the wake of two newly published orders from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, The Guardian, two American legislatures have introduced a bill that would require the government to declassify FISC opinions
that
describe how the secret court has interpreted Section 215 of the Patriot Act and Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act.
If they've bothered to read it at all.
Right. These two parts of federal law are the official legal justification as to why the government has the authority to engage in programs like the one the National Security Agency has with Verizon and presumably other telecom providers, as well as other related court covert digital surveillance often conducted by the spy agency.
So basically, now drones have the ability to kill us if someone says we're a terrorist, and now they have a database of everything we've ever done textually or, you know, voice-based to build a case against us if they want to.
Yeah.
I'm curious, is the the gun owner lobby, who's against background checks if they keep any records of them, because they don't want any records whatsoever in the government about who owns guns. Except when the jackboot thugs from Obama come to your house, they won't know whether you have a gun or not.
Okay.
Okay. Why do those people also seem to be the ones who like the NSA? Because the NSA now knows whether you have a gun or not. In other words, by tracking your email, by tracking who you phone, make phone calls to, all that kind of stuff, I'm sure they can tell whether you own a gun or not just by
I think there's two possible answers to that, maybe two and a half. Right. One is they're hypocritical brains,
okay,
or they have ties to the ones who are in power, right, or both.
Okay. Or maybe I'm just speculating that the same people believe both.
Or maybe you're trying to use logic in a world that's yeah, upside down.
So yeah, what's the solution to this?
Go to sleep.
Really? Take, no, that's what they would like you to do.
Take the blue pill.
How do you stop getting the government from doing this kind of crap?
Government's wonderful. They love you. It's okay. Don't worry.
Well, the government would like nothing better than for everybody to be on welfare.
Right.
So they can control you. No?
How close are we already?
I'm kidding. Yeah. No, but I mean, what do you do? I mean, this article, they're talking about basically trying to declassify stuff, because of what the NSA has just been found doing. Go ahead.
The only way is to get money out of politics. If you're talking seriously,
congressional candidates who
you have to get money out of politics. And since money and politics are married to each other, I don't think it's going to happen.
Right.
If you really want to get it out, let people actually have representation in government and not corporations that pay the officials to do their bidding instead of the bidding of the other 99.99% of the people they should be representing.
What were you saying?
No, just vote for candidates for the Senate and Congress that make promises to try to overturn this stuff, although they'll lie.
Right.
Can't really believe what they say.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Or I have an idea.
Well, Obama's excuse is that certain people say they're going to do things and then they don't do them. But that's politics.
Right.
That's his excuse as to why some of the things that he promised when he was running have never happened.
Yeah.
It's a very complicated mix with him. It's a very complicated mix with him.
Yeah, yeah.
But basically, I think the only answer is, let's have a party that actually supports us.
I'm sad now.
Vote for Hillary Clinton.
Is it my turn or is it your turn?
I'm done. Go ahead.
Oh, it is my turn.
Okay.
Let's get some other stuff going here. This is just for you guys to talk about because you know more about it than me. But basically, MakerBot is merging with Stratasys.
What?
Thank you for the drama.
What's MakerBot?
MakerBot Industries, creators of the popular Thing-O-Matic and Replicator line of 3D printers, is being acquired by Stratasys, a company that's been working on a 3D printing and production system since 1989.
So basically, 1989. Jeez, I didn't even think 3D printing was.
3D printing wasn't around necessarily then on a consumer level.
Okay,
but I think Stratasys is what Strata turned into, and Strata used to own some programs. One was Strata 3D, where you could design three-dimensional. No,
okay,
that's a different company.
All right,
but I think that's what Stratasys turned into, but I could be wrong. But basically, the article from Slashdot is saying that it's a pretty good match.
Huh.
So that was my story.
I have a comment.
Discuss it amongst yourselves.
I have a comment about 3D printing in general. You've heard the old joke that if the only tool you have is a hammer, then all problems look like nails.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's what I feel about 3D printing.
I think you're correct.
Everyone's so totally in love with the idea of 3D printing. But it's actually a very, very limited tool for what it can make. The old-fashioned tools of taking blocks of metal and drilling holes in them and
work better than 3D printing right now,
casting and things like that are still very valuable for all kinds of manufacturing. 3D printing is only for a certain type of things.
Right, but
every
new technology goes through this fascination phase where it's like, wow, let's try doing this with a 3D printer.
Yeah.
Well, you could just cast it in bronze and wax mold, but... Go ahead.
No, but the other thing is different materials. Materials are different. You don't just take plastic and dribble it out and make any kind of material of any strength. because metals, even if a very identical alloy, depending on how you heat it, how you cool it down, how you manufacture it, has very different characteristics.
Right, right.
Very different strengths.
And we already have a 3,000-year history of knowing how to do stuff with metal.
Right, and the alloys, the size, little difference of an alloy can make a big difference. So just dribbling some plastic simply does not make those types of materials.
I tend to have the same view of it as you do, because I've seen stuff come and go. But I do think this one is a little bit different because of the number of different things that you can make on your own that you used to have to be dependent on a much more commercial endeavor to produce for you.
Right.
But I do agree that it's like you can't make an airplane that flies at supersonic speed with a 3D printer.
Right, yeah.
But well, you can
speedy enough? No,
you can make some useful stuff. I mean, there are people that are making most of the body parts, most of the actual body of an electric car with a 3D printer.
Okay.
And because of it, because the structures don't have to be super strong, like they can make them thick enough that it works out to make a body of an electric car or whatever car that you want to put an engine in, that you get to save a lot of material and you can make it, you know, really efficient. But
if you want to mass produce it, you just make a mold and stick plastic in it for 2 seconds and make the same thing.
I understand what you're saying, and I do agree. I'm just saying I think this particular wave of new technology, because of the number of things you can do with it, is a little bit different. Okay. Somebody else's turn.
Mark Binet.
Hold on. I lost my place in my...
Are you old?
Yes. There's a book called the... I talked about this before, the book called Exploding the Phone.
Yes.
Well, the author of that... Phil Lapsley. The author of that has a history of phone freaking blog where he posts documents and posts background information about the book from time to time. He posted something about... Like, when was this? 1955. The government was talking about internally was... You know, high security documents, that they had a way of tapping telephones by not having to do anything. Just, they didn't even have to go in your office. They could, with the old instruments, really old instruments that are available like in the 40s and stuff.
Yeah.
That the way they were wired internally, they could send ultrasonic waves down your telephone wires and cause your microphone to kind of turn on enough that they could barely listen to your office, to the microphone.
Oh, really?
To the so sound of your office.
Was it a voltage they were sending down?
But like ultrasonic frequencies.
Oh, okay.
They probably have to be in the same building to get those kinds of things.
Because of the interference pattern with that and the microphone, they could get the vibrations from your microphone based on what you were saying.
Only real old phones, though, not the more modern series of them. Yeah.
I thought when you went on hook, it wasn't necessarily disconnected. That the microphone was
It might go through a capacitor or something. There might be still be something.
I heard, at one point there was a possibility that the phone company could listen to conversations just as plain as if you had the phone off the hook.
Well, microphones need DC current. That when your phone's hung up, there's no DC. And telephone microphones do.
Okay.
So I think, and also the hook switch of modern in the last 20 years instruments.
Yeah.
When you hang it up, it cuts off the phone line completely.
I understand the ones that require power, but the old telephones.
Yeah. No, but even the old ones.
Really? Okay.
When you hung them up, they would cut off both sides of the circuit, so there's really nothing connected to the phone line at all.
But
I'll tell you about ones before that series, like in the 1940s, early 50s.
Okay.
The telephone instruments used back then apparently were amenable to this kind of a thing.
Weird. Interesting.
Yeah. And then the other one, if I get back here.
So they could spy.
Right.
They could spy on gangsters and thugs and criminals. Right. Just the what the NSA does now, but back in the 40s.
Yes. Exactly.
With Tesla-style technology.
That, you know, sometimes old is good.
Anyway, yes, who posted on their slurpcast.com the history of phone freaking blog, and he just has a lot of entries like that.
Okay.
You want to take a story, Wes, or can I go?
Let's see. So we had a couple of announcements. We had the Xbox One and the PS4.
I love the fact that They nicknamed it now the Xbox 180.
Yeah.
As in complete turnaround.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's ridiculous, and I think Microsoft will be like, will be hurt. What they're really going to do is they're going to backpedal. So the fact that you have to have it always connected to the internet, it's going to check, I think, like once a day.
Well, apparently they've already backpedaled on that one. Like,
right. It was, then it was just you had to connect it to your phone.
And then it was,
that
they were not going to allow used games to run on the Xbox One, and I think they're still upholding that.
There was some announcement today. That one may be gone too.
Okay. So basically, while all of these restrictions were there when they first announced the Xbox One, Sony comes out like a week later with their reveal. Of the PS4, and basically they said, yeah, all that stuff that Xbox One is doing,
we're not going to do that.
No, not at all. And not only that, but it's going to be $100 less. So whereas the Xbox One is $500, the Sony PS4 is $400. This is all old news by now, but in my discussions with people who are gamers, they said, yeah, thank goodness that the firmware of the Xbox One is updatable. So that when Microsoft sees their market share going downhill fast, they'll be able to like backpedal and make changes to their hardware pretty quickly. So,
how does that company keep making money?
I think they're arrogant, and I think
like
that's
Windows and Office,
right? Yeah. And a lot of
I know, but it just I was saying more from a moral standpoint.
I see.
Well, I think they got big headed. I mean, Xbox 360 is a great gaming system, and they sold a lot of games, and they did very, very well with their live connection 360. So people have these memberships, and they're using their system to watch Netflix and do all kinds of good stuff, and it's integrated into their home. But I think they got pretty big-headed, and they thought they could charge for all these different services. And anyway, I think they will lose their momentum if they limit what their hardware can do.
I think that's all they'll lose because they don't really have a reputation anymore.
Right.
Xbox, I want to say that the Xbox was kind of holding up Microsoft's reputation for a while. Like,
I just meant reputation for being like non-arrogant or like moral or helpful to their customers.
My friends, when I questioned them about Microsoft, a lot of people were telling me that Xbox was the thing that was the good product that Microsoft was selling. So,
well, if you go into the Microsoft store nowadays, you'll see a crowd, but only around the Xbox machines.
Right, they're all playing Dance Revolution or whatever.
You don't see people that much anywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they don't have a lot of products to sell, and they don't have a lot of low-end products to sell, whereas Apple has low-end products and high-end products, and they've got a lot of them.
Speaking of which,
yeah,
I know that you'll probably join me in this. What do you think of the new Mac Tower?
So we had the WWDC, which was another thing that occurred recently, which is the Worldwide Developer Conference, and they announced a few upgrades to some of their MacBook Airs, and they announced the Xeon-based Mac Pro, which is a desktop.
Well, that's just in development. They really very early announced that.
Yeah, so they're not selling it yet, and it's just very, very early on. But they showed pictures of it, and they talked about what's going into it. And Steve Schiller said, "Innovate." Apple can't innovate anymore? My ass. Right. He said that up on stage.
So they actually innovated his ass?
Yeah, his ass has been innovated.
It was 3D printing.
So that's how he was able to talk out of it like that?
Well, I don't think Steve would have appreciated him saying, innovate, can't, Apple can't innovate? My ass. I don't think if Steve were around, that would have gotten
it. I know, I couldn't avoid the obvious joke.
That sure.
They innovated the ass that he was talking out of.
Yeah, his ass is innovative.
No, but Microsoft did innovate one thing that...
What? The fact that you want to touch my Surface?
Yes. That's all you have to do is do that, then you have to buy one. I mean, what other brand has it that just touches
so when actually, what they're really saying is that's a virus that you actually get when you touch it.
Right.
So when are you buying a Surface?
I already did once, and I gave it back.
You bought, it's because you bought the
RT. I bought
RT.
The RT one.
Yeah, you didn't buy the Pro.
Right. I wouldn't buy it. I actually wouldn't buy it.
It was a rookie mistake?
I'm tempted to buy one of the $400 full Windows 8 tablets, but not the Surface Pro.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
No, but the Xbox One, though, if you ignore the gaming part, it's also a good set-top box that does a lot of things.
Well, that's
has a lot of innovation to it.
That's what they're trying to market it as a media device, right?
Right.
More so
Except
than
so
just
it's so expensive for that, because you can get Roku for $79 or something like that.
Well, you can get like a leftover machine and run Plex on it or run XBMC. I mean, there's other alternatives that are totally, completely open source and free. And if you have like an old machine lying around, you just slap that in there and put a little little wireless card in there, and you're good to go.
Yeah, but I say you just buy it. If you don't want to do that, you can buy fully made things by Roku.
True.
And others are under $100.
Well, Linksys makes them. The same HP thing. Makes them. These are all media server boxes with some intelligence and a processor inside. I use a Synology DS411 something or other, but yeah, I mean, a lot of NAS drives have processors also.
Actually, I could post an article about how to cut your cable cord, how to do absolutely everything that way.
Okay.
You know, using a spare PC. And,
yeah, I think I read the same article.
And just over the air antennas and stuff, you can...
Wes is again touching his surface.
He's obsessive with cleaning it.
We're in a public place. Could you please wait?
Sorry.
My precious.
Yeah.
Okay. It's clean.
Unfortunately, that's not a virus. That's just how Wes is.
Wes bought both keyboards.
I did. I couldn't decide between the clicky keyboard and the touchy keyboard. And I just decided, well, I'll just get both. Figure it out later.
So if a bunch of touchy people get together, is that a click of touchies?
Yes. No, a crick. Anyway, that's another story.
The craw!
It's another story.
I have a story about, how evil corporations are and how the government's pretty much in bed with them. But basically, this one just disgusted me.
Okay.
A top Monsanto executive has won the prestigious World Food Prize. Secretary of State John Kerry announced the award where Robert T. Fraley, the executive vice president and CTO of Monsanto, won the prize, along with two other scientists from Belgium and the U.S. The award was given for devising a method to insert genes into another organism, into plants, which could produce new genetic lines with highly favorable traits. What this really means, though, is that Monsanto's war against farmers and anything that can't be patented and make money for them just got an award for being evil.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. On the other hand, we have billions and billions of billions and billions of people to feed.
Is that your Carl Sagan?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Go ahead.
Billions and
we already have enough food to feed them. We just don't have the infrastructure to distribute it.
Right.
Because it's all...
But they're growing. There's more of them all the time.
So do you mind the exploration and experimentation of these genetic alterations?
No.
What you mind is the profiting off of the sale and lying about what they're selling.
And using that patent to prevent farmers who have farms next to your field who get cross-pollinated by your frickin' Frankencorn and then suing them for growing it.
Yeah, I think the lying is the thing that I'm not okay with.
Coincidentally, so am I.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean the whole, and I'm all for being able to state on packaging what's been genetically altered. I think that's fair and should be. You know,
they're already creating a race of insects that are immune to the poisons that they're putting into this corn.
Yeah. I don't.
It's already been proven to cause weird birth defects in mice. It's just a big steamroller running over. Just another one of our rights, freedoms, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And they got an award for it.
Yeah.
Well, who gave the award?
John Kerry.
No, but for what organization?
The World Food Prize. I don't know who runs that.
Okay.
Probably Monsanto. It's probably some corporate.
Yeah, but I'm betting it's not Occupy Wall Street.
It's probably Monsanto. They're funding it or something.
Right.
We give ourselves an award!
Companies do that. They'll open up, meetings and conferences that they fund themselves to congratulate themselves.
A friend of mine and I started an award society based on that concept called the Brown Carpet Society because we both happened to have brown carpet at the time and we gave each other awards occasionally.
Okay. Mark, you did something similar to that.
No, my friend, the Better Dining Society?
Yes.
Yeah, my friend ran this organization to pay himself through college called the Better Dining Society where he...
Did he register as a non-profit corporation?
No. No, there's
for tax-free benefits?
There's another company that actually does the same thing, probably to this day.
I love this.
But what he would do, this is long before the internet, so he would go to Yellow Pages. He'd go to the library and look up Yellow Pages for other cities and write down the names and addresses of restaurants advertising in big Yellow Page ads.
And then he'd come in representing the society?
Yes, and he'd write them letters saying, congratulations, our panel has chosen your restaurant for the Better Dining Society Award.
And then he'd try to get them to give him free food.
No, to buy the certificate.
Okay.
So he would send them a card saying, please make sure our information on our directory is correct. Fill in your name and address correctly on this card. And the card had a checkbox saying, if you'd like a certificate to hang on your wall to commemorate this award,
please check this box,
send $25. And a lot of people did. So he made his way through college with all the people who checked the box.
I'm hoping that's not the only way he was funding himself through college.
That might have been, I don't know.
It's better for your story if it's the only way, right?
College was cheaper back then. No, college was really a lot cheaper back then.
But that's ingenious. I think that's a really good idea. He probably made a lot of money.
He got annual renewals, too. Okay. They renew their certificate every year.
Yeah. To send out a new certificate to put in your frame?
That's awesome.
Yes, exactly.
That's awesome.
Right.
Well, I'm laughing because my friend and I came up with the Brown Carpet Society. So that's along the same lines. What a world.
Yeah, so we're getting close. Okay. We should wrap up here.
So I like Chromebooks again.
What?
I'm playing with Chromebooks.
Wait.
On the Chromebook
Did
thing.
Did I just hear Steve Jobs spin in his grave or his cryogenic chamber, whichever you prefer to believe? You just said something about Google that was good.
Chromebooks. Only if they're
cheap. Wait.
I don't like expensive
Did
Chromebooks.
Did Steve tell you to love Google? Because you only do stuff that Steve tells you to do.
Right.
Even the ghost of Steve.
Yeah.
Steve's dead.
I hear him passing wind in his coffin again. He did that before with something that you said. It was kind of like...
And that's the microphone we have live in this car.
Nobody else knows.
I don't think that's true. It was definitely some kind of Mac chime.
Was it a Mac chime?
Bing!
Okay. But anyway, so I buy Chromebooks every once in a while, and I used to hate them because they were just really slow.
Well, you didn't hate them. They were really slow.
But you were trying to actually like them.
You thought the idea was pretty cool, but all the actual Chromebooks you were playing with, you were unsatisfied with. And you were trying to make it work because you kept blaming it on the development firmware.
Right.
You were always trying to get the latest and greatest of the development firmware that kept
and
updating.
But even the stable one sometimes. It was still bugged down very badly.
Okay, but you did really like the idea, and I was kind of like curious as to why, because I thought of it as a dumb terminal.
I liked it if they were cheap enough.
Okay.
Could it just be that he's cranky and old?
Anyway, there's one now that's really cheap, and it's actually very fast.
Okay.
And I like it.
And it's not the Pixel.
No. Oh, God, the Pixel is like crazy. I don't understand the Pixel at all, because the whole point of Chrome to me is cheap, and easy to use for your grandparents or for kids or something.
Yeah.
So.
Sure.
Anyway. The famous Chromebook that everyone talks about is a $249.
Right, that's the one they advertise on all their pages, right?
Which has an ARM chip, so there's a version of Chrome in there, has to be compiled especially for it and stuff.
Okay.
And everyone's always talked about that one not being that good, that it's very slow also.
Right.
But there was one even cheaper. The Acer always had one for $200. If you go into Best Buy, there's a $200 Acer.
Right.
Picks a $249 Samsung.
But the Acer and then the Pixel. They now have the Pixel in every
single... Some Pixel. Yeah. Everyone has them?
Well, almost everyone, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so the problem with the Acer is that it had a real hard drive. Chromebooks always traditionally had a 16-gigabyte SSD, so it was part of the thing to make them fast.
That's another thing that makes the Surface fast.
Right, but the Acer had a regular hard drive, which was just weird, so everyone totally ignored it, thought it was too weird. Well, Acer has now had that same machine, but with an SSD in it. Still for $200.
Really?
So I bought one out of curiosity. It's actually very fast. They fixed the problems with Chrome.
Okay.
That used to bother me. And over $200, the Acer is very fast if you can live with the limitations of a Chromebook over a Windows machine or something.
So is that the 7-inch one?
It's like 13-inch or something.
Oh, really?
Or 12-inch.
Do you have it?
I have it, yeah.
So
not with me, but I use it.
I was mistaken about what you're talking about.
Okay. I use it as my coffee table computer.
Okay.
Because it's so far, you know, sitting there watching TV on the coffee table, and you have to walk all the way in the other room to use a computer. So now, finally, at last, I have a computer on my coffee table. I don't have to walk all the way in the other room.
And if it gets destroyed, since everything is in the cloud, he doesn't care.
Yeah, it's only $200. So I don't
care. And the NSA can just download it back to your new device.
Well, as you know, Google's like publicly made us all aware of how many requests for personal information the NSA has
made. Chromebooks are backed up automatically anyway.
I know.
Just like my old Android phone.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes it easier for them to actually get the information away from the Google because it's in the cloud. It's right there. They don't have to actually approach you or look at your hard drive. It's already there. So they just pull it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Much more efficient.
It's much more efficient. Much easier. Less.
My rights can be violated just like that.
As a matter of fact, they already have, and I didn't even know about it.
Anyway, it's other than craps, that's all I've got.
Okay.
I haven't really been keeping up with craps all that much.
Have you been keeping up with craps? No?
Not that much.
Do we even
There's
care?
There's a World War Z app.
Is there really?
I know you care about
that. I do care about that.
Like
Why do you care about
so
that?
So I read the book. I read the book, okay. And I liked the book. It took me a couple of weeks as I'm reading the book to figure out what the hell was going
Did
on.
Did Brad Pitt write the book?
No.
Okay.
Let's see, Max Brooks, Mel Brooks'
son. Oh, okay.
Yeah, wrote this. Not Mel Blanc. Who just recently passed away.
Mel Blanc's son recently passed away, or Mel Blanc recently passed away?
No, Mel Blanc passed away.
So there's a blank neck. Never mind.
You're going down a path I don't want to go down. Anyway, so World War Z is a book that it's a book he wrote after he wrote the Zombie Survival Guide,
which I started reading and I got bored with it afterwards.
The thing I didn't like about World War Z was that it's a compilation of stories that are not related to each other whatsoever in any way. So it takes a while to figure out how to get any benefit from the book as you're reading it, because by the time you start to like enjoy what you're reading, suddenly the story stops and a brand new one that's not related starts. So
it's a fiction story, so there's no benefit other than enjoying it.
Well, how to get anything out of it was unclear until I realized it's not about the individual stories, it's about the time frames, because that is the only thing linear about the book. It's basically from the time that the disease is discovered, the virus, all the way through to like the affecting of the whole world, all the way to how they resolve the issues.
Spoiler warning.
Anyway, I didn't spoil anything. But
well, the movie probably will be more clear. I
think the movie's not going to follow the book. It's going to be probably the best of the short stories in the book that somebody picks, and then
it has the same title, but it's really a buddy movie.
And they write one storyline that weaves through all those different short stories.
What's a family movie about the poor man, the soldier leaving his family behind while he goes out to fight the zombies?
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Nice.
From the previews.
That's true, yeah. But he's not poor, though. He's
not
a... What?
No, I meant the poor soldier. I didn't mean it.
Oh, okay. All right. No, he's actually some kind of like a biomedic guy, and he like understands stuff that nobody else does.
Is that like one of the stories?
No, it's actually not related to any of the stories that I can figure out at all. So
it's a lot like a lot of other Hollywood movies based on books.
It might end up being crap, but I know Brad Pitt has actually put a lot of his own money into it. That's one of the things that I've read. So
it might be a money pit for him.
Superman's story is supposed to be just a bunch of fighting. Without really the new Superman movie.
Yeah, have you seen it?
No, not yet.
I have.
I did too.
Yeah.
There's just a bunch of fighting and
there's a shitload of fighting in it, yeah. There's like, if you can punch somebody and have them fly through six different buildings, it's in the movie.
Okay.
And survive?
Did you know that the original Superman didn't fly, he just leapt over buildings?
Just jumped a long way.
Well, there is actually some...
Like the Incredible Hulk?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how actually the Superman starts out.
Right. Yeah.
He doesn't realize the maximum of his powers. And he's never, he doesn't, I don't want to spoil it, but.
Okay.
Well, how about this?
Powers?
I liked the movie. Did you like it?
I actually liked the movie, yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, there were some amazing fight scenes. One of the things that, that the writer did in this story is literally give you a really good taste of what it would be like for very super strong characters to fight each other in our world.
Who have a very high body density.
Yeah. I mean, because they're literally throwing each other around.
Yeah.
And you see them flying through buildings, landing on the ground, like skiing on cement. And leaving trails behind. It's pretty amazing.
As opposed to skating on thin ice is what we are doing right now because we're all really tired.
Yeah. Anyway. So we should wrap it up.
Okay.
I guess I'm glad if you guys got any enjoyment out of this. I'm going to sleep
now. You're talking
now.
To us? You're talking to you're someone talking who's not on the other side of the microphone?
Talking to the public.
Oh, okay.
All right. So, thanks, Mark. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks for coming up.
Yeah, it was cool.